From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Friday, April 24. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 6,672 cases of coronavirus. But since yesterday, nationwide, just 13 new cases have been confirmed, as we continue to flatten the curve. I'm joined now by health reporter Rachel Clune. Welcome back to Please Explain, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Tori.
I wanted to talk to you about recovery rates. So far in Australia, we have recorded just more than 6,600 cases of coronavirus, but more than 5,000 of those cases have recovered. So, Rachel, how do they work that out?
It's a lot more basic than you'd think. They don't test people. In New South Wales, what they've been doing is calling people up 3 weeks after they've been diagnosed and having a chat with them. So, you know, are you still feeling symptoms? What are those symptoms if you're feeling them? When did you recover if you're not feeling symptoms anymore? So it sounds quite basic, but it's actually the best way to find out if people have recovered from the disease.
And they're not going back and retesting them to confirm?
Yeah, they're not going back and testing people. And that's interesting because there are lots of questions around how long people carry the virus for and how long they're potentially immune for. And there are antibody tests that can tell you that. But at this stage, they're just using these phone conversations to find out whether people are symptomatic. So we don't have that data, unfortunately.
So given the importance of the recovery numbers on decision making, it does seem a little bit kind of seat of the pants that it's that simple. What are the instructions people are getting if they've had coronavirus as to how long they have to stay home and not be in contact with people?
So when people are tested for coronavirus and that test is positive, they're then interviewed. So they have a chat about who they've been in contact with, where they've been and those sorts of things. So then the health authorities can go and track down any other potential new cases. Those people who've tested positive have to stay home, and they have to stay home until they're symptom-free, and they have to be symptom-free for a few days before they can then go about their normal business. And that is when the next phone call comes in to find out if they're symptom-free or not.
Look, it feels like the million-dollar unanswered question that we're all wondering is, if you've had coronavirus, can you get it again and can you be a carrier again? What's the latest thinking on that?
Well, the latest thinking is that we really don't know, unfortunately, because of this antibody testing. So the antibody testing sees whether your immune system has responded to the virus. Now, we don't know how long those antibodies last in the bloodstream. You know, you can catch an ordinary cold a few times. You know, the immunity you get for a cold doesn't last very long. With the flu, it lasts a bit longer. And that data would be really important, you know, if we're thinking about loosening restrictions on our day-to-day movement. But we just don't know at this stage how long that immunity lasts, if it lasts very long at all.
So it's not like we're in this situation where people who've had the virus get some kind of gold medal that they get to wear and that allows them to go around hugging people and breaching social distancing guidelines.
I wish that was the case, but it doesn't seem to be like that. It's not chicken pox in that you get it and you're fine and you won't get it again later. There have been reports from Wuhan that people have gotten coronavirus a second time. They haven't been verified, but it's certainly something that authorities are looking at as to whether you can get it again and how soon is the big question, I guess.
Yeah. Is it possible that those cases of people saying that they've had it again were a failure in testing of some sort, like they had a test that was a false negative?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some people in New South Wales who have had coronavirus for longer than 6 weeks and still haven't recovered from that initial bout of illness. And that's quite a long time, really. So it is potentially the case that these people had coronavirus, had very mild symptoms, thought they were better, got retested, and turns out they still had it. So that's absolutely a possibility.
Is there any data on the severity amongst those 5,000 people who have recovered, what each of them went through? I mean, is there a way of saying this many percent of them only had mild symptoms, this many percent were quite ill?
Yeah, look, that was something I asked the New South Wales health authorities who've been tracing these recovered patients. And they've certainly been asking people what symptoms they had, how sick they were feeling, And they've collected all that data, but they haven't released it at this stage because they're waiting for a little bit more so they can give us a really robust idea of how people have travelled. I mean, they have said that people who are older have been sicker for longer, so it's taken them longer to recover. And obviously people who have been in hospital or in intensive care units are taking longer to recover from the illness as well. But at this stage, we haven't been given the information on who is how sick and how old they were and all those other details that we'd really love to know.
So what are your contacts in the health industry and sector telling you about the mood inside hospitals? You know, a few weeks ago, everyone was just at real panic stations. There was this sense of dread across the nation about how our ICUs were going to be full. That obviously hasn't played out. Is there a sense still of concern amongst health workers that something is coming at them that they're not prepared for, or has the mood changed?
I think the mood has changed slightly. Certainly that initial panic that hospitals were going to be absolutely overrun has eased, which is fantastic. But there is concern that there'll be a second wave of cases when all these restrictions ease. People can go to the beach again, people can start running, and there'll be more spread of the virus. There are more concerns around, you know, being able to access masks and gowns and the things that keep healthcare workers safe from the virus. There have been about 60 healthcare workers just in New South Wales who've fallen ill with coronavirus. So that's still a really big concern. But in terms of being overrun in ICUs, I think everyone feels that we've missed the boat on that, which is great.
Yeah, it certainly does feel like there is a light at the end of the tunnel, certainly on the health front. I think on the economic front, things are different. How much does the recovery rate examination go into the chief medical officer's thinking about lifting restrictions? Because we've been so focused on the number of cases and the number of deaths. Is this recovery rate going to start to impact the decision making?
I don't think it will impact the decision making so much. It's more the incubation period that is the thing that concerns them. So when one person gets coronavirus, you don't know for about a week after that if they've managed to transmit that to other people. So that incubation period is really the concern. In terms of recovery, I think the vast majority of people have been recovering within 3 weeks, which is pretty great. And I think that in terms of knowing how many hospital beds they need has been quite helpful. But as we said before, you know, I think the concern over the number of ICU beds has certainly passed, which is great.
Mm. Certainly New South Wales has upped its testing regime. The Premier Gladys Berejiklian this morning said basically anyone with any symptoms whatsoever can get tested, and they're testing many, many thousands of people every day. What are we learning about how many people can have the virus but be asymptomatic?
We haven't got much information on that yet. They've only just recently started offering testing to anyone who has any kind of symptoms. So they're going to, I think, start testing people in aged care facilities who don't have symptoms just because of the high risk to those people. But at the moment, the expanded testing is for people with symptoms. So we're not really going to catch that asymptomatic spread at this stage, which is interesting because there's been a lot of international data that says there is the possibility of spreading this disease when you don't have symptoms.
Is the goal to get all of us tested eventually?
Absolutely. And I think we'll be tested more than once, all of us, because this is not a one-off. We're going to get coronavirus next year and the year after and the year after that. It's going to just become a regular part of our flu and cold season, I think. So testing is going to become part and parcel of our lives, I think.
And what are the health experts saying to you about which measures have been the most effective? Because there's no doubt that Australia's response has had pretty spectacular results compared to what we are looking at around the world. What are they putting that down to? Is it our geography? Is it our personal behaviour? Is it the laws? What are they saying to you?
Our geography has been one of the largest factors. Very early on in this piece, I had experts telling me that we should shut the borders. And I remember thinking at the time that that was a really extreme measure to close our borders to all international travel. But that has proven to be one of the best responses we've had, because most of our cases still have been from international travel or from cruise passengers. So by stopping that travel, we've managed to prevent a lot of community spread of coronavirus. And certainly all the social distancing has helped the health experts track every potential case, and that's kept a lid on any widespread outbreak that we could have had here.
And also, just finally, Rach, what's it been like for you covering this as a health reporter? As I said, 6 weeks ago, it just felt like the end of the world was coming, and it must have been very stressful for you talking constantly with people in the health industry. Does it feel a bit different now?
It does. It was, like you said, 6 weeks ago, it was a bit bizarre. Even just a bit before that, when, you know, we felt like we had a handle on it, things were going smoothly, and then all of a sudden it just started to grow exponentially and experts started to get really worried. And that's when we as health reporters started to get, you know, quite concerned as well. And it looked like we were staring down the barrel of quite a bad outbreak in Australia. So, you know, I was chatting to some health contacts yesterday, and we were just saying it was great to be able to have a chat and not have a 2-second phone call and have to rush to the next thing. So it certainly calmed down, which has been a great relief 6 weeks on from that initial craziness.
Yeah, it's nice for all of us to be able to take a breath. Thanks so much for being on the podcast again, Rachel.
Thanks again for having me.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Tom McKendrick and Amelia Maguire.
The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis fairly, factually and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search Subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.